All right, folks. Welcome back to yet another episode of Fresh Juice, an indie game podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tommy Fresh, and joined, as always, it is...
Matty Juice! What is up, everybody? Episode 47 is upon us here, almost at that one-year mark, Tommy, for Fresh Juice. It's amazing.
It is, honestly. It is. I mean, consistent. If anything, we're consistent, and if anything else, we're amazing. How about that? You know what I'm saying? but... It's been a good 47 episodes. And this one, we're actually changing it up a little bit. You know, we were going to review this one game, and then the devs didn't get back to us. And, you know, I came up with this idea because I've been seeing a lot of just Slay the Spire content, people kind of coming back to the game, getting hyped for Slay the Spire 2. Let's do a throwback. We're going to review something that we... weren't a podcast for when it came out. And Slay the Spire is one of those games that really inspired a lot of different a lot of different games, including a lot of games that we've liked already. So, you know, why not come back? It's a revisit for me. It's the first time you've ever played it.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see what your thoughts are on this game because, you know, I was hesitant about this game for a long time, and it wasn't until like I had Apple Arcade and I could just get it. I was like, all right, I'll try this game that everybody talks about. And then I was telling Maddie before we started recording, I looked at my save file. I have 158 hours into the game. So
yeah.
I haven't played in a bit. So it was nice to kind of refresh myself with the game. So it should be interesting to see what's going on. But we'll get to that in a little bit because we have some other pressing news. Not even news because we got to catch up. What's up? How you been? What's going on, dude?
I'm good, you know. Let's see. This weekend I went golfing, which was a good time. I haven't been golfing in a few months, I think. So that was fun. Ended the round with two pars back to back, which is felt pretty good, you know, for me. So that was nice. And then yeah, Sunday I did like a 6.5 hour stream, Once Human stuff. So that was a lot of fun. I just kind of hung out a bit. We also got a new fence at the house, which is awesome. So that means, you know, maybe getting a dog sometime in the near future. We'll see. We're trying to prep for that. So a lot of exciting stuff going on over here, Tommy. And obviously an exciting weekend coming up.
Oh yeah.
With The Batch, you know, and we could talk about that a little later, I guess, if we want to. But hey, yeah, other than that, it was good.
We'll be talking about it next week at some point. And
it's if we survive it.
that is the thing. The Bachelor Party is coming up now. Fence is very exciting. Dogs very exciting as well. Hopefully, streaming 6.5 hours, very exciting. I popped in a little bit. And also, golf is very exciting. I went golfing maybe once this summer. It's just been busy. And, you know, I guess trying to save some money a little bit for this wedding. So,
it's been hot, too. You know, it's just like,
yes.
You know, most of the summer has been like, wait, I don't even want to go outside, let alone golf, you know.
But this week is beautiful.
Oh, and yeah.
It's going to be amazing this weekend, I think. So, you know. Everything's I love when a plan comes together. My weekend was okay. Friday went out to dinner, that was fun, and then Saturday I went to go play some cards, and then afterwards, because like I was alone, like, you know, my fiance was at her friend's, let's play some cards. I was like, you know what, maybe I'll go out for one drink. And then one drink turned into many. And Sunday was a day of pain, day of pain all day. But I got
the Lord's day.
Yeah, I got to chill, watch some stuff, including something that you know, I'm going to recommend later, and play some video games as well. Especially once I really started feeling better, ordered some pizza. I was like, I just need carbs, man. I just need some carbs. Yeah. So ordered some pizza, and we were back to relatively normal on today. You know, we're hanging it. We're hanging it. And everything's good. I'm having another alcoholic beverage. I don't learn. I'm not a learning kind of guy. So it is what it is, but we got to get to some news.
Yeah, we do.
Biggest news ever. We do have a Discord, folks. The Fresh Juice Discord. Please check it out. It's in the show notes. You can ask listener questions. Sometimes we ask you a question. Like this week, we asked you a question. And it is just it's a bang in time in there. So check that out. But also, it's a little tough right now. There is some news that you posted in here. I read the article. It's a little weird for indie game publishing right now.
Yeah. I thought this was a pretty interesting article from gamesindustry.biz, which they usually have some pretty good articles over there. It just talks about like the state of game publishing, specifically like indie game publishing, and basically how the era of kind of the generalist indie publisher is over, right? So these publishers that are, larger companies that basically, maybe bit off more than they could chew. In terms of like hiring and in terms of projects. And we've seen, obviously, this year has been a huge year for like closures of studios and layoffs. And what's happening is that these really like these smaller kind of agile publishers are kind of eating into like the market share of these larger publishers. And that is kind of what this article talks about. They've got some great quotes from different publishers, all across kind of the industry, AAA publishers, as well as, indie publishers, just kind of talking about, that publishing is kind of changing within games. And over the last like 18 months or so, it's been like kind of bleak, in the gaming industry regarding publishing, and that the future seems like it's going to be more of these smaller indie agile, publishers versus these larger publishers. And it kind of made me start thinking, obviously we saw one of the Devolver games and studios shut down with Wizard with a Gun, with Galvanic Games like earlier in the year. And Devolver's to me, probably like it's the premier indie publisher. I hope Devolver doesn't go away, but Devolver's also pretty large, So I think this is kind of like, it kind of got me thinking a little bit about them of like, is anything going to happen with them, eventually? And hopefully they've got their, their chickens in a row, eggs in a row, whatever it's, whatever that saying is. But yeah, I just thought it was an interesting article and just kind of brought up some interesting discussions.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough kind of thing that exists, because if these publishers don't understand that things take time, that's when you run into issues, right? So not only are there issues with the way you overwork these devs and your expectations of what happens and when it's done and whether the product is polished enough or not. It also, there are issues when you plan for those things, right? So you plan for all those things. So the reason that you're pressuring these devs a lot is because you have a lot of money riding on it, because you didn't account for it, right? And to be honest, like, that's a simple fix, but it's just kind of hard to justify for a lot of these people, these publishers, right? It's an easy fix. It's like, well, adjust for anything that could take long, some schedule changes. Let's get this out, because guess what? And I think even Local Thunk was interviewed in the article. Baltro, right? Kind of struck gold. Sold 2 million copies already, which is insane. And, like, that's an indie dev, right? And self-published, I believe?
I believe so. Yeah. Local Thunk didn't publish it. There was another publisher, but I'm not too sure on, like, the size of that publisher. I think he's a great example of something that, he didn't know. He's mentioned many times, like, he didn't know how big Baltro was going to be. Mm-hmm. And that was something else they brought up in the article as well, is like the difficulty in like predicting, a game success, like on, both sides of the spectrum, right? Of whether it's going to be a huge hit, whether it's going to be a very niche game and doesn't have a huge audience. It's hard to really predict those things. And basically what the article is saying is like too many decisions are being made based on these like predictive metrics. And it shouldn't really be like that, mm-hmm. because then it ends up, you know, you end up investing in the wrong parts of your business. And that's also why these kind of like self-publishing titles seems to be kind of the better way to go lately, is because you are just focused on this one thing. You're not having to worry about these, all these other projects, right, that you're needing to like split the budget for and then figure out the metrics for. So yeah, that was kind of a bigger part of mm-hmm. the article as well. But I definitely recommend like the listeners go check out the article. It's they did a great job in terms of like research and getting those developer interviews. And it's kind of just like a finger on the pulse of the industry right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I always like when these kind of articles pop up, right? Kind of, you know, because we're really outside the industry. I know we've got a indie game podcast, right? But like, we're not, you know, we don't work at a game studio, all that sort of stuff. So actually hearing from these people and like, you know, this sort of environment is always, it's always great to just kind of get like an inside look at actually how things are working from like a AAA standpoint and also from an indie standpoint. And it's also tied into like something that we've brought up a few times during the podcast, is that we think there's an indie boom that's going to be happening. And we were mainly talking about the developer side of it, but it's also affecting the publishing side of it as well, where I think over the next like few years, we're really going to see a huge boom in self-developed and published games, or solo developers and solo publishers perhaps as well. Yeah, it's just really interesting stuff with this article, and definitely, you know, something that I agree with, like just based on my observations.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting too, because you try to like pinpoint what makes these games a hit, right? And like, how can they get a better predictive metric here?
Yeah.
And I don't know, this is just anecdotal, but I watch like a lot of gameplay videos, right? You know, of like streamers or whatever that play games that I would be interested in, whether it's roguelites, deck builders, whatever. And a lot of these games, right, that get like at least a couple videos out of these creators are you almost always hear them say, yeah, this was a Next Fest demo that like, yeah. Oh, I really like this. And like, or like a lot of my followers really liked it and said, you got to play this. I think Balatro was a demo, right? People were like, you know, going crazy over it. Ember Ward was a great demo, et cetera, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera. And that is probably one of the best things you can get in terms of like marketing. It's like, it's not like free marketing, but it's marketing, right? That you get someone to love your game and then create content for it, right? Like yeah. On like a large scale. So like, it's hard to say, because even I was looking on Twitter, and Jose, who made, what was the game we played a couple weeks ago? The first person shooter, Xenophobia.
Exophobia. Yeah.
Xenophobia. Yeah. Exophobia. He tweeted out something that, you know, ended up getting like a lot of traction. And it was like, he said, I don't want to sound ungrateful, but like, I am getting a little frustrated that like a lot of the YouTubers that, and like media outlets that I've reached out to about this game haven't really got back to me, and it's not getting the coverage. Anybody have any, kind of advice or whatever? And the advice doesn't matter, but like, I can understand that kind of frustration. Like I made like a really cool game and only Fresh Juice covered it. No.
Yeah, so, right.
No, like, you know, it is so important that people watch you play, or people play your game, right? Like, yeah, this is the world we live in. Twitch, YouTube, it's so important. So, I don't know.
Yeah. And even like related to that, like we've had, you know, it's something that the listeners probably don't really know, but a good amount of the games we've covered on here, like the developers have watched our episodes and given us feedback for it. You know, they've left comments on our YouTube videos. They replied to our emails, because we usually will send them our published reviews. So it's definitely something that, like, regardless of the size of their studio or whatever publisher, they care. They care like at who is reviewing their game, who is showing some gameplay. And I mean, I was happy, you know, even though like we didn't give Exophobia like a certified Fresh Juice or anything, I love that we were covering it because you can tell, like, when we're doing our research, we can kind of tell, like, when a game isn't really being talked about a lot, because that's something we kind of look into, you know. So being able to talk about that stuff on the show is, you know, it's we're proud to do it. But I also would love if, like, I think Exophobia is a perfect example of a game that should be talked about by some of the bigger outlets, you know. Yeah. They've got a lot of cool things going for it. So, yeah, that's I feel like that marketing struggle or that marketing has always been a struggle, right, for some of these indie devs. It's something we talk about with the indie devs at PAX, too. I know, like, Max for the Juice game was talking about that as well. It's like he's more of a developer, and it's something that, you know, he struggles with the marketing side of it. Like, how do you actually promote a game when you're putting all of your dedication and effort into making the game? So I think that's where publishing comes in as well, is that they help out with the marketing. So it's interesting that, like, you know, kind of these smaller publishers are kind of like kind of bringing it back home, right? These smaller publishers are really the ones that, I guess, care more about these indie games and care more about promoting them than some of these larger publishers that bite off a little bit more than they can chew with all their projects. So, anyway, Fresh Juice Publishing opening up 2025.
I would love that. I would love that. Now, I mean, like, yeah, it's true. These devs also want you to enjoy their game, and they want you to have fun. I mean, I'm blanking on his name, but the dev from Astrodule 2, when we told him that we played it in our hotel room all that last night, he was like, that's amazing. He was like, what? And we ended up getting keys to, like, give away, like, you know, so, like, that was really cool. So, hopefully, everything kind of becomes a bit more predictable. I mean, nothing's predictable anymore, but, like, hopefully that this isn't, like, a mar on indie games and that it ends up kind of, like, propelling them, which should be pretty interesting. Now, we do got to talk about Slay the Spire. We're slaying some spires. So, what is Slay the Spire? As I said before, this was a game that I was hesitant. You know, I was in the card game world. People were like, you got to play Slay the Spire. I think even I think our cousin Dan said, you got to play this game. He was playing it with our friend Pat. He's like, it's so cool. I'm like, oh, yeah. He's trying to explain it to me. And it didn't make much sense when Dan, if you're listening, it didn't, at the time, I didn't understand what you're saying. But that could be my problem. Now, so time passes. I get into Flesh and Blood. And then some buds in Flesh and Blood, they're playing it. My friend Will's playing it. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, I wasn't like super thrilled with the art style at first glance either. I was like, I don't know. And then, you know, as I said, I got the demo, or not the demo. It was on Apple Arcade, and I was like, oh, it's free. I'll try it. And then I put in a lot of hours. I've said all this, but what is Slay the Spire? You know, it's a deck building roguelike. If anything, it is the deck building roguelike. It is. Become Astronomical was originally released January 23rd, 2019, during a different time and era. You know,
yeah, right.
and, you know, their blurb is, we fuse card games and roguelikes together to make the best single-player deck builder we could. Craft a unique deck, encounter bizarre creatures, discover relics of immense power, and slay the spire. What is the spire? You're kind of going up this map to the top of the spire to fight the final boss, and that is it. So gameplay wise, it is a deck builder. You start out with one of four characters, and they all have distinct card choices that you can grab within the game. You have the Ironclad, the Watcher, the
Silence,
and then what was the fourth one? Oh my god.
Didn't unlock it.
It was the tip of my tongue.
The Tommy.
Oh, no, this is bad. I should know this. It's probably one that I played the least. Watcher, Ironclad, Silent.
It's Defect.
Oh, Defect. Yes, there Defect is the one that has the orbs. So they all have different kind of abilities, right? And they all have different starting relics. Relics are these kind of passive effects. You can see them on the top left of the screen. you know, the Ironclad, the first one that you start with. This is like kind of the most straightforward one. It is doing a certain thing. It is gaining life at the beginning of every encounter, or at the end of every encounter. I forget if it's the beginning or the end. And has a lot more of defensive options, but also like some really intense attack options. So what do I mean by that? So you get three resources a turn, and you can play cards in your hand. From your deck, you start with a small deck at 10 cards. It's all base deck, usually with four attacks for defense, and then two special ones, I think, is what you start with. It might be 5, 5, and 2, so maybe 12 cards. But so that's what you start with, and you draw your cards, you 5 cards a turn, and then when you draw through your deck, it shuffles up, and you're off to the races to keep playing until you destroy all the monsters in your encounter. This is not too dissimilar to how the gameplay loop is in like board games like Dominion and other deck builders like that. So if you're familiar with that, that's what it is. But the difference is here, you're kind of trying to make a deck that is synergistic and strong, and then find good relics. You got potions that do certain things. You can, you know, go to the shop, remove cards, buy relics, buy potions. So you're going through, you have to beat 3 bosses to win. And once you do that with all 4 characters, you get to unlock Ascension mode. Ascension mode increases the difficulty every time, and you want to do Ascension 20. This is like the stakes in Balotro, if you're more familiar with Balotro. Clean gameplay. I think it's as a card gamer, I underestimated this game and how deep it could be. And as soon as I started playing and getting into it and even replaying, like it got me excited again. Like, oh yeah, like I can pick this, and like maybe I'll just focus on just building up block and stuff like that. Super cool. The enemies are unique, and they can be very annoying, that's for certain, but it's a roguelike, so like you got to go through and try to beat them all. You got to be kind of strategic about how you go through the map, whether you want to fight elite bosses, which will give you more relics, but they're very hard to beat, etc. It is a fun gameplay loop. But I am a card gamer. Matthew, you are not really a card gamer. And I'm interested to see where your thoughts were on Slay the Spire.
Yeah, so I played this on mobile. Which is, I was actually kind of surprised that I decided to do that, but it was just because out of necessity, I was like, all right, I'm not going to be near my computer, but I need to play this game for the podcast. So it was actually on, I know it's on Apple Arcade, but it's also on the Google Play Pass, which is basically Apple Arcade. So I got that for a month. It's also on Game Pass. It's on everything.
Yeah.
Anything, it's on your toaster, all that sort of stuff. So, so that was cool. But anyway, getting into the gameplay, I at first, you know, going into this game, right, and hearing all of the hype around it, right, because I've heard this game mentioned, you know, countless times, and looking at gameplay for it, you know, in the past, I've always just been like, kind of like what you were mentioning, where I'm just like, I'm not crazy about the art style, like this, it seems like it's almost like a little too complicated, but actually getting into the gameplay, and again, I really only did one run. I died at the second boss. But, you know, I did it over like 2 or 3 different play sessions because I was like, you know, there's a lot to it, you know, with doing a run. So I found it to be a lot simpler, at least from what I was playing. I only played Ironclad. That's the first, you know, class that you kind of get, character that you get. And then I unlocked the Silent after that. So I haven't played the Silent yet, but the Silent seems cool. It's got like poison and stuff that you can do. So I'm excited to try that out. But yeah, overall, like for me, the gameplay was a lot simpler than I was thinking it was going to be. There were a few kind of mechanics that I had to get a little bit used to, like the fact that your armor kind of resets after your turn. So what I found was interesting. And again, I don't know if this is like a common thing with like games like this, but the fact that you know the intentions of your enemy before they do something allows you to prepare for what they're going to do, which is great. You know, like the only real card game I have experience with is like Hearthstone, and that's like mostly PvP. You know, you can go against like AI and stuff like that. So you never know what your like opponent's going to do in that. So playing a game like this where like I know at least the general idea of what the opponent's going to do, that just made like everything more simple. And it does get more complicated the more you go through it, because I did end up dying to the second boss, which just I just ran out of health. That you know, it was like a night. I don't know if all the bosses are different too. Like that's the thing as I was playing this game, is like there's so much variety as well. With there's just so much to talk about like with this game, it's hard for me to like narrow down a certain thing. So let me stick with like the simplicity of it. You know what your opponent's going to do. So you know if your opponent's going to attack, you're like, okay, I should probably build up some blocks before my opponent attacks. So I enjoyed that kind of aspect of it, of like knowing what your opponent's going to do beforehand. And then as far as, you know, the resources that you have, you know, looking at, you know, 3 mana, right, or resource points, initially I'm like, okay, this is not like enough. But then you start to get like some cards that give you extra resource points, you know, if they take a little bit of your health away, or if certain specific factors like come into play, you can basically get some more resource points, which is great. And one thing that I really like about the game is that it kind of has like a D&D feel to it. I don't know if that's like, you know, I'm not a big D&D player, but even like the combat aspect, it kind of has that D&D feel. But then you also can encounter, as you're going through the map, these question marks, which you don't know what they're going to be. They could be a combat encounter, they could be a different type of encounter. And one of those encounters, at least, is like a kind of just like a text-based sort of encounter, where it tells you like a situation that has happened, and then you have to make a decision based on that situation. I think one of them I came across, because there was a few of them, but one of them was like, just as an example, I think I like was walking through a swamp and I dropped some coins. And so I could either decide to go back and get the coins, but I would take some damage to my health, or I could just leave them. So I decided it was like 4 damage to my health, but I got back like 30 coins or something like that. I was like, that's probably worth it. So I think that's really cool. You know, like I enjoyed kind of like not every level is a, you know, just kind of the same thing of like combat over and over again. There's definitely like variety there. And yeah, there's just so much variance with the gameplay in terms of like the different cards you can get that you can add to your deck. You know, you're trying to synergize cards, but you also don't know what the enemies are going to be that you're going to be facing. So you don't really know how they're going to synergize with your cards, right? So like you might have an enemy that, I don't know, just like makes you very vulnerable. They can put like a vulnerable kind of like debuff on your character. So you might have cards that are, you know, trying to make that character vulnerable, but you're kind of being out vulnerable, I guess, by the enemy, which is kind of what happened to me towards the end, where they were just doing so much damage to me because I was like a weaker kind of character because of all the debuffs they put on. So there's just so much variance with the characters and with the combat. I did really enjoy it, you know, even though I was like playing on mobile. We'll talk about the mobile experience, like kind of towards the performance part of things. Because there were a few things where I was just like, I wish this was a little bit more fine tuned. But overall, I mean, the gameplay was a lot better than I was thinking it was going to be. And it was a lot simpler than I thought it was going to be. Not saying that it can't get very complex and like you have to really think about things. But I think the fact that you only have 3 resource points per turn, typically, right, is that that kind of just like makes it like, okay, I can only do like a few things. Like you don't need to overthink things. I think like when I played Hearthstone, you know, every turn you're getting a mana crystal until you get 10. And then when you have 10 of them, you know, you might have a hand with like six or seven cards and you're like, you have to think about the order of everything. You know, what's, do I play a seven mana card? Like in this game, it's really like, you know, there's very cheap cards because you only have three resource points. You can get cards that reduce their cost based on certain things that happen. So I never really found myself like worrying too much about like the order of things. Maybe that's just because I was like, I'm a new player, right? I think eventually that probably matters. That's probably why I ended up dying as well. But for the most part, I was like, yeah, like I was just kind of like cruising through like the first world after I beat the first boss, like that was fine. And then the second one, I was like getting a little bit more difficulty. And you know, I had to start to worry a little bit about like the order of things, but it still wasn't to the point where I was just like, you know, very concerned about like, okay, if I like, I didn't feel like I messed up any turns, I guess is what I'm saying, like entirely, which I might have, but I didn't feel like I did. Overall, I enjoyed the gameplay for this. Like, I do want to play more of it. I want to get it on PC, though. I think I'll have like a little bit of a better experience playing on PC, but it's good to have it on the mobile phone, too, so you can play it, you know, whenever you want to.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to enjoy it with the gameplay side of things.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting that I've only ever played on mobile. Those 158 hours I was talking about, that's all my phone.
Right? Oh, my God. Yeah, that's all on the toilet.
Yeah, I mean, toilet and bed and while I'm driving, all those. So, yeah, I mean, some things to clear up that you don't know yet because you've only played one run is that the bosses are usually one of three each tier. So the first tier is like one of three you can run into, and then the second tier is one of three, and then the last tier is one of three. There's a special in-game thing there. I don't want to spoil it. So, yeah, I think what you're touching on here is actually something quite brilliant about the game is that the new player experience for something that actually goes very, very deep is pretty great here, right? You understand. You're like, I could do the math. I can attack for this much this turn, or I can block for this much this turn, or I could do a combination of the two, and I'll figure it out. As more cards get into my deck, it's going to be a little bit, you know, wonkier, but at that point, I've already kind of gotten a feel for it. And the cool thing is, you know, the new player experience, you're just like, discovering all these encounters and stuff like that, and then these cards. And you do unlock cards as you play. I should say that.
Yeah.
And each hero or whatever, each character has X amount of cards you can unlock that you find throughout the runs. And then you get a feel for it. And then you like, it's almost to a certain point where you run into a specific kind of enemy and you know exactly the sequence of their attacks is going to be. And you just plan out the whole battle that way. And that's how people like speed run it. They're just like, all right, this is the squiggly boof. I'm going to kill it in three different turns because it's going to do this and that and then this again. So it's a cool gameplay.
Yeah. Loop.
Interested to see how it was playing on your phone, though, because I've never had issues ever.
Yeah, it was mainly, I mean, like, I can talk a little bit about it now, but it was mainly like selecting the cards. I would accidentally play cards, basically, because I'd be like, I'm a new player, so I'm like tapping on each one to see like what they do. And then like sometimes I would like kind of move my finger up a little bit too much, like trying to select another card, and it would just play it. I was like, oh, God, like I didn't want to play that one. Yeah, but again, like it didn't. That's why I was also like, you know, the order of things when I was playing didn't really matter, because even when I accidentally played cards, it was fine. I was like, all right, I can like work around this. I didn't really want to do that, but it was fine. And just also one other thing that I just remembered that I enjoyed about the game is that like sometimes when I go into these like deck builder kind of games or just card games, you know, there are so many different like buffs, debuffs, and like all these different effects that can kind of happen. And sometimes it can be like a little overwhelming, right? Of just like, especially when you don't know, you know, you're hovering over icons and you're like, you know, what exactly does this do? And like, maybe there's like a paragraph of text there, whatever it is. I kind of got a little bit of that feel with like Throne of Bone. I thought like sometimes for me, I was just like, this is just like a lot to remember, basically. In Slay the Spire, like I was pretty happy with like all of their debuffs and everything was just like a quick like few words. Like I could be like, oh, okay, like this character like gets their shield back. You know, they get like 15 shield every turn. All right, no problem. Like I started to like easily learn like, okay, I can easily see like this character's vulnerable. I don't even need to hover over it anymore because I know the vulnerable logo. I know that icon. I know the weak icon, you know? So I think like this game did a great job of like teaching you those things like very quickly, where sometimes with other games, even like a game like Hearthstone, like it took me a while to realize what like the different debuffs look like. And in this game, I just feel like they really streamlined it. Where it's just, you know, of course, like when I was doing the last boss battle, I was like, there's a lot going on here. But it was mainly just because I was getting like overwhelmed because I was not prepared for this boss. But it was like the knight or something. I think it was he was like a knight that just had a lot of health. But yeah, so I just really enjoyed like the tooltips were like very brief and easy to understand. There wasn't like too much of like, you know, well, when he's weak, you know, it's he takes, I don't know, he does 25% less damage, but also this and like all these keywords. Like it was very straightforward for me. And then even the cards themselves, like what they say, I didn't feel like there was just too much going on or too many keywords I didn't know. So yeah, I just want to kind of give the game props for that as well. As a new player to this sort of genre and this game, it was, you know, it was easier to understand than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's awesome to hear, but yeah. Story-wise, it is a roguelike, yeah. So, you know, there isn't, like, a very solid story. You know that you have, like, these really fleshed out, like, character designs. Your character, you know, they give you a little blurb of what the character is and does, and you know, what, you know, you're going up the spire, and you're beating these like, evil creatures as you're going through this dungeon. And most of the story here is told through the encounters and the kind of like even some blurbs from like text blurbs or conversation blurbs, dialogue. That's the word I'm looking for from some enemies and stuff like that. In terms of the bosses mostly. So like you get to see some kind of like world building here, which is quite neat. And there's like just so many like items and potions and relics and stuff like that. Like you get a feel that this world is fleshed out, right? Without actually just telling you a story, you're experiencing the story by just going on this run. And every time the story is going to change a little bit, but it's always going to have the same beginning, middle, and hopefully a good end if you win. So it is it's a roguelike story. It doesn't need to be anything crazy, but all that being said, character design, character naming, it's all really, really cool and like really builds the world in the perfect way. So it's not, you know, something that we say in trading card games sometimes. Some people will say if this game was just numbers on cardboard, I'd still play. And I don't believe that from anybody that says that, to be honest, because I'm like, no, you're playing this because that card looks cool. And yeah, it's strong. But if you wanted to just play numbers on cardboard, you'd play like chess or something like that. Don't give me that. So I love that they really build a world here.
Yeah. There's an idea for a game too. It should be called Numbers on Cardboard. We'll make our own roguelike deck builder, you know? Like you basically said everything I wanted to say about story. You know, there's a lot of character, a lot of flavor in this game. I didn't really pay attention too much to the story stuff, you know, the little bit that was there. But there's definitely like this kind of, you know, you're the hero, right? And you want to defeat these enemies. Like I felt that I needed to defeat these things, you know, even though I just started playing, I don't have any real investment with the character, but I was just like, these enemies like look gross. They're like, they're annoying me. Like I want to defeat them. And that kind of ties into the story a little bit, you know, but yeah, there's not really like a strong story from my standpoint, but I'm sure the more that I play it though, I'll start to pick up on more things. Like I don't even really know the names of the characters, or at least the enemies, I should say, anything like that. But I guess you get to a certain point you were mentioning where like, you'll know the names of like specific enemies and then you'll know like their kind of habits or their like sequence of attacks, things like that. So is that kind of like how it goes? The more you play is that you're like, oh, this is like Flip Flop, the enemy or whatever is, you know, the name is.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, at this point, I don't really remember a lot of the enemy names, but like, to me, I just started learning them by their look. But like I've talked to people, they're like, oh, did you run into the elite? And I was like, which one's that again? But like other people are paying attention to the names. Like I'm like, oh yeah, the one that looks like a buff demon. Yeah, I know that one. It does get to a point where you get familiar with these characters in one way or another.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I was actually even, I think the first boss I came across, I was preparing to like talk about it on here because I thought I was going to die and I would be like, oh, I died to the ball with the three other balls flying around it. Like that was like, I don't even know what this thing is called, but it's like this, it's kind of got like this, it's a white ball with like a kind of carving or like some sort of like swirl on it. And then it has like these three white orb balls that are smaller versions of it, like flying around it. I think that was a boss. I don't think it was an elite, but I almost died to it, but I ended up beating it.
Was it the Hexaghost?
That sounds right. I have no idea. The Hexaghost. I'm going to Google it right now.
I don't know. Or was it...
No, it wasn't the Hexaghost.
Was it the Spheric Guardian? Oh, yeah. It's got to be the Spheric Guardian. It's just a regular enemy. It's not even a boss.
Oh, that's not a boss. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just a monster found in Acts 2 and 3 of the Spire. Well, you know.
Acts 2. I mean, hey, listen, you made it to Act 2 your first run. Is actually pretty impressive.
Oh, cool. Well, you know. Yeah, I'm going to go pro probably. Slay the Spire, you know. But I'm also, I do have a question because I know we got to get into the art as well. But in terms of, you know, this was my first run, like, how different is it with future runs? Like, are the maps totally different in terms of like the order of the things that appear on there? I imagine they are, do you always see like, for example, like this one, the Spheric Guardian appears in Act 2 and 3, I guess it said. So are you seeing some enemies more often than others? Or is it like truly just like, you have no idea what's going to show up?
You have like a group of enemies that you can expect.
Okay.
In each part of each act. Like in the early part of the act, it's not going to be as strong as the ones that you'll find later, but it is kind of like a rotating thing, a lot like the bosses and the elites. And the map is always different, right? Like whenever you play, it's procedurally generated or whatever, and you have all these different paths you can think about. Some people, like, you know, good Slay the Spire players will scroll up and see where they can go and what they can hit and yada yada yada. I'm just like, whatever. You know, we'll figure it out. So and then also there's a cool thing in the beginning that we didn't talk about that's always in the game is like when you start, I don't know if it's in the first time you run. I think it is. When you start the game, before you start the run, you have the option to give up your do something that's negative for you, but get something that's powerful to change the way that your run's going to go. Like, there's one where you lose a decent amount of health or something like that. You get like or you lose your starting relic, and then the first six encounters or something like that, the first three encounters, your enemy's health's at one. So you do that, and then you're like, okay, so I'm going to try to plan to get to an elite in my third, for my third encounter so that I can easily beat it and get a free relic or something like that. So there's a whole bunch of different kind of things there, and then you can kind of build out your run that way. And but
yeah,
every run's a little bit different, right? Because you might see different cards when you get your rewards, right? Every time you beat an enemy, you get the 3-card reward. This is something I think Slay the Spire really coined, that like roguelike deck builder roguelikes have been using ever since. When you beat a level, here's 3 new cards, you can choose one of them. And that's going to change, your deck's going to change, the enemies will change, kind of, the encounters will change. It ends up like every run's a little bit different. You're like, I was on this kind of build and I didn't get there, and then this time I was on this kind of build. Not too different from like Balatro's. Like I was like all in on flushes, and then this time I was all in on straights. So it's just got that, man. So
yeah, cool, awesome. Yeah, I'm excited to play more for sure.
Yeah, let's get to the art, because this is something that we both said we weren't super into it, right?
Yeah.
To start, and you know, and I do take a little bit of a back, right? Not all of it. It's still not my favorite art style in a game. However, it still works here, right? It's as simple as it needs to be, because one thing that this game is doing really great on the art and visual side is the UI. It is, I think, second to none. You go to your map, they have a legend, right? Your key that you could just like, all right, that's pretty simple, and I can just do that. And then you have a pretty simple layout for when you're in the battle. You have your relics, you have your health. Everything is very like organized, right? And it's not more complicated than it needs to be. I played other roguelite, especially deck builders, where it's even good ones, like Monster Train. It's a good deck builder roguelike. Miserable UI. I'm like, I don't know how anybody plays this. This is awful. But I like it, but like it's pretty bad. And this game is like knocking it out of the park. Now, I also say that the card art is all pretty cool. And the cool thing is, as you go through the game and you like win different ascensions, I believe, you can unlock alternate art for the cards, which is pretty neat. You can even get like the... I forget, maybe once you beat it with every character, you get access to the sketch art for like the original, like first draft of these cards. So cool. All really cool stuff. The character design is really unique and really cool. It does build the world, as we said. The art style, you know, tends to be a little flash gamey, right? And that's not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, I don't know. I would like in the second one for there to be some updates here, but there is a charm to it. So they might even just say, you know, this is us. This is our style. We're sticking with it, which I would totally respect. But what about you after you got into the game?
Yeah, I agree. Like it did remind me of like a flash game. And honestly, like that was probably, I know it's like probably ridiculous to say, but that was maybe the biggest thing holding me back from trying it when I first saw it. I was just like, it seems like it's still in the works, like early access almost. But yeah, I agree. Like this is, you know, if this is something they're just going to lean into for the second game, like more power to you. Like, yeah, this is the Slay the Spire aesthetic. This is just what it looks like. I would love to see like some awesome, because I think their environments are really cool. Their enemy design is really cool. Like just imagine kind of a like 3D, I guess 2.5D sort of like, you know, Unreal Engine 5 sort of like look to it. Something like that could be really cool for the way the characters look. But it's nothing that is going to be, you know, holding me back from like playing more, because the gameplay is like really what shines here. So the art, I'm not crazy about it. I appreciate the character and the flavor that the art has. It's very, you know, it's very Slay the Spire. Like I've never played anything other than a flash game that kind of looks like this. I think it's a really cool idea too, with like that kind of concept or sketch art you were mentioning, and getting different kind of art styles for the cards themselves, which is pretty cool. Is that something you could also unlock for like your characters? Like, can Ironclad look different as well, or is it like Ironclad or those characters always look the same?
I've never unlocked something like that, so I don't think so.
But, yeah. Gotcha. Okay. But yeah, no, I mean, overall, I mean, the art doesn't hold the game back for me. You know, like the gameplay itself is really like what I'm focused on. But, you know, I am hoping in the second game, you know, make things like tighten things up a little bit, you know, maybe, you know, just kind of, yeah, I don't know, polish it up. It's really hard to like put your finger on like specifically what like you're not crazy about. It's just kind of the whole package, right? It's just like it seems like it's a flash game. But again, doesn't really hold anything back for me gameplay wise. Like it's nothing that gets in the way. It's nothing that like you know is hard to read. Everything's like easy to read with the art style. I never found any like significant issues, even like when you're in the merchant shop and like they kind of have the merchant's like fingers kind of like hovering over everything that you're selecting. I found that actually kind of cool, even though it does block some of the letters that are on the card itself in the title, but that was fine for me. So yeah, the art, it's got its own kind of style, which I guess you kind of applaud them for, right? Because it's like, they were bold enough to try like their own sort of style. And, you know, maybe there's other games out there, but I don't think there's any game as popular as Slay the Spire that has this art style. So, yeah, I don't mind the art at the end of the day, but I do think they could do more with it, with the way that the characters look, the way the environment is. I feel like it could look cooler, but it really just doesn't bother me enough to really have an issue with it, I guess.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So I'm just looking right now at the Slay the Spire 2 reveal, which was, that was the III initiative, was it not?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so the art does look slightly updated. It still has their style, right? From the couple screen grabs from what they showed, I'm assuming it's going to be what this looks like. If maybe... It has a little bit more depth. It's a little bit cleaner and not as flat. It's like they just upgraded it, which is nice, right? Like, I think we just want more Slay the Spire. So, like you said, it's not a game changer, but,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, even looking at it, like I'm looking at some screenshots of Slay of the Spire 2. Like you can even tell like the UI, like the top bar there has been cleaned up a little bit. You know, you got your potions like kind of in their own little section and, you know, I guess it's like a little bit more sectioned off. But yeah, they basically like polished it, I guess. It's kind of what it looks like. Yeah. So I'm down with that. Do you actually know if there is a... Is Slay the Spire, because I know it came out in 2019, is there any other kind of medium that they've gone into, like a TV show or comic series, anything like that?
Well, actually, yes. They just released a board game that is wildly successful, apparently. Very good. So it's like you're playing the video game, but as a board game. And you play it like, I think you play it like co-op. Like you're both going through the Spire, which is kind of cool. So Sounds pretty neat. So, when they did the reveal, they had that like really cool animation. It would make for a good TV show or something like that. So, very cool. Now, sound wise, I mean, just sounds like you're going through like a D&D session, right? Like, I mean, you mentioned D&D earlier. The soundtrack is very D&D-esque. Cranks up when you're playing against a boss. You know, it's a good vibe. It's a good vibe. I mean, I didn't play with a lot of it on when I played back then, but when I revisited, I was like, oh yeah, it's good. You know, good sound effects and stuff like that. Nothing too crazy, but just what it needed.
Yeah, agreed. It's like very, while I was playing it on my phone, Maria was like reading one of her like fantasy books, and she commented, she was like, that soundtrack is perfect for what I'm reading right now. It's like this epic, like kind of fantasy music. And I was like, oh, perfect. That's great. But yeah, it's nothing, you know, nothing that I would be able to tell, like, okay, this is Slay the Spire soundtrack. But yeah, I, you know, nothing wrong with that either. You know, I think it gets the job done, and yeah, all the sound effects, everything was good. Yeah, no, I don't have a lot of comments really about the sound. I think they did a fine job.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And performance, I mean, you mentioned on the phone that, you know, some issues with card playing. I guess when I first started playing, I probably had the same issue because, like, I just wasn't used to it and whatever. But in reality, I mean, it never really crashed on me ever. I always played pretty clean. Still does. But any other comments there?
No, yeah, it ran well. And actually, like, probably the art style is, like, you know, a reason that it can run on so many things too, you know. So that's, you know, another pro there for the art. But yeah, no issues at all. And really about, like, the card thing is, like, just because I am, like, used to, like, the way Hearthstone does it, where, like, you can drag a card out basically, like, and move it all over your screen and then, like, drop it to play it. I think in this game, I think if I remember correctly, like, when you drag it up to a certain point, it just, like, plays it. So, like, I've had that issue as well with, like, you know, we talked about Preserve last week. I'd love to be able to, like, drag the animal card out and then it turns into an animal. Like, just those little things that, like, I mean, I'm comparing it to, like, a Blizzard game. So, like, they're just really good at that sort of stuff. But just, like, those small little things that I just, like, I'm just used to with, like, a game like Hearthstone, even though I haven't played it in years at this point, but it's the only reference point I have, really. But yeah, other than that, I mean, yeah, no real performance issues. And it's really just a learning curve kind of thing, I think. You know, now I'll just kind of tap on the cards as I want to read them rather than try to drag them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that'll just fix that issue. So it's more of a my error, I think, than the game's error.
Yeah, and I do believe, like, if a card targets a specific thing, you do have to drag it to whatever it's supposed to be targeting. But, like, something like just gaining block, that probably was what you accidentally played, where you dragged that, but it just happened.
Yeah, or, like, the AoE attacks where, like, damages, like, all enemies or stuff like that. Yeah, it was, like, stuff like that that I accidentally played. But, again, it didn't really affect my run at the end of the day.
Yeah, so Slay the Spire. We, instead of giving it, like, our ratings, I think that we decided, since I think it's, you look at something like this, right? Overwhelmingly positive on Steam. Entered the zeitgeist of indie games. They have plushes of the characters that you could buy. There's a board game now. Slay the Spire 2 is one of the most hyped games of 2025. It's without saying that this game, in the eyes of the general public, this is a certified fresh juice. But when revisiting it for me and visiting it for the first time with Maddie, we are going to say, is it or is it not certified fresh juice? What is your thoughts? I want to know.
I would say it is. And that's because, I mean, more than, like, the influence that the game has had, and also just as someone that, like, you know, has kind of played games that I never realized were influenced from Slay the Spire, which is just a cool thing to see. I just think the game has so much replayability. Even I've only done one run, but I could already tell through that run, I'm like, oh wow, like, there's so many different variables every time you play. And it's all, everything that I did, I was like, this is all fun. Like, none of these really frustrated me. It's just like playing like Balatro. Like, I never really got frustrated at losing. I'm like, oh, I'll just do another run, you know, and see what happens this run, see what I end up going with. So, I think that, you know, the general public is correct about this game. It's definitely a banger. And it's honestly something I wish that I played, like, at launch, so I could see kind of the development of it. You know, what did it look like at launch where people loved it that much? You know, that would be kind of interesting to look back and see. And then just a small thing actually on that, because I've been meaning to ask you, because I know you said you took a little break from playing the game. You know, it's been a little bit. Did anything change? Like when you went to go play it recently, was there anything where you're like, oh, they updated like this or that or anything like that?
No, I think I got into the game past any like content updates or anything like that or fixes. Okay. If there was, there might have been some like bugs that they like ironed out. Actually, I could probably even look on my phone, which right now, but you know, it has been the same since, and it's still just a banger, and it's still certified fresh juice for me. You know, it's hard to like, it's almost weird, right? I look at these roguelike deck builders all the time. Like, I'm like, oh, a new one's out. I got to see what it's about. And sometimes I'm like, oh, man, it just looks like Slay the Spire. And then I'm like, well, what? That's not a bad thing. Like, yeah. That game was awesome. Maybe this game does something a little bit different, and we'll see. I do enjoy more the games like Ember Ward that feel like a different take on what Slay the Spire did. But you could still see influences from it. Slay the Spire is just a certified classic, right? I think it's always going to be. Hopefully, Slay the Spire 2 lives up to the hype. But to be honest, like, it doesn't even really need to, because like people could just go back to the original, honestly, and still have a lot of fun. We just want more content for it, rather than, I guess, give more content. They just want to make a new game, which is understandable. Give it a new facelift and stuff like that. So still certified fresh juice. I think if you continue to play it, Matt, you're gonna like it. You're gonna like the silent. There's like these cards that like you throw shivs at the enemy and stuff like that. You're creating a bunch of shivs. That's pretty cool. You know, and then the other two characters, Defect and the Watcher, are just like so different. Like it's the first departure from the regular attack and block mechanics that you learn in the first two characters.
Oh, then, cool. All right.
And then they're like doing something like totally different. You're like, oh, what the hell is this? So, yeah.
Cool.
Very, very cool. Glad you enjoyed. So,
yeah.
Aspire. And next week, I think we might do another throwback. We'll see. Depends on our time and what we can do. But we're getting close to a year in on the podcast, so submit your year-end questions. We'll do a big banging episode for that one, where we just like look back at like what we reviewed this past year, stuff like that. That'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. There's a lot to talk about. That's for sure. Yeah. Speaking of questions, too, Tommy, what do we have coming up here?
Listener questions, which can be submitted in the Fresh Juice Discord. First question coming from, well, actually, I also posed the question, what's your favorite roguelike, to the juice heads out there? And we got a couple back, and also some questions along with it. K-more says Hades, which is a great answer. The gameplay and the story are just top of the line amazing. And the question, I do love Hades. New Smash Bros. Is announced. When I read this question initially, I thought I missed an announcement. And I was like, what? a new Smash Bros. Is announced. What DLC characters, even guest ones, would you like to see?
Great question. It's honestly, it's something that I think, you know, we talk about off the show, like, regularly. And so just a few things here. There's a lot of them. I'm sure I'll think of more. Paper Mario, I think, would be great to have in Super Smash. We've never had Paper Mario. It could be a really cool kind of moveset. Also, I've always wanted, like, the villagers, like the Delfinos from Super Mario Sunshine. I just think they'd be really cool. They'd have, like, these weird, like, water abilities maybe or something. I don't know. But I've always just been like, they would be cool to have in there. And then, of course, I have on my list, like, Goku. I mean, the rumor's been there since the N64. Just put him in there, you know. Let me just see what he could do. So that would be cool, Goku from Dragon Ball Z. But yeah, those are my three that I thought of right off the bat.
So the first one would be Blue from
Blue's Clues.
No, from Pokemon Red. right? Like you're your rival, right? Okay. But doesn't have Pokemon. You just get to beat them up. You just get to kill them. This one is tough. I always wanted Shy Guy as a playable character. You know, we get to play a Shy Guy in like Mario Kart. Why not? Like, let's get him going in Smash. There's so many tough ones. I am so, and this is going to be a controversial opinion, I'm so sick of the anime characters in Smash Bros. I don't need any more of them.
Agree.
You guys got them. You got them. I don't.
Like, you won.
I watched a TikTok of this one channel. It was ranking, or they were trying to guess the rankings of most hype Smash Bros. Smash Bros. Character announcements, and they were like, number one's got to be Sora, and they're like, no, it's not. It's not even on the list. They're like, this list is so dumb. Sora, I'm like, dude, Sora sucks. Who cares? My God. Duck Hunt rocked.
Yeah, dude, I was more psyched for freaking the free Pac-Man that everybody got or whatever. Yeah. That was sick, dude. Pac-Man?
Pac-Man was awesome. Yeah, Frogger. Frogger's going to come up in the show a lot. Ever since when it came up a couple weeks ago, I've been thinking more and more about Frogger. Frogger would be sick. Putt-Putt.
Ooh, Putt-Putt.
Pajama Sam.
Oh, Pajama Sam.
Freddy the Fish.
Let's get them all in there.
That would be a good DLC pack. You get all three of them.
That would be pretty dope.
That would be so dope. But, like, I don't know. Like, it would be cool to get some Slay the Spire characters. Like, those would all be pretty sick. I believe, you could play as one in that one game we played at PAX.
Oh, Fraymakers, yeah.
Yeah, Fraymakers. So stuff like that, I don't know. There's like so many, but like I would want like some weird ones, right?
Yeah,
like ones that people are like, why? Like would not be hype. The opposite of hype, except for like a select few of people.
Like, like Wii Fit Trainer, which is already in the game. Which
but people love Wii Fit Trainer. It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe like DJ Hero. Like, whoa, DJ.
We should just choose games that like aren't around anymore, right?
Waluigi.
Waluigi.
That's been the most asked for.
Yeah.
Character forever. Capullo's favorite roguelike. Said kind of hard to pick a fave. Probably have to say Balatro. I mean, I'm probably right there. Honestly.
Yeah. I agree.
Played a lot of Balatro. Although right now I'm really struggling to get my last few Jokers on Gold Stake, and it is frustrating. I'll tell you that much. And Capullo's question is, what do you think is the best video game, maybe indie, to introduce to a toddler? What age should it be their first video game experience?
So honestly, my default answer for this is always Minecraft. I think Minecraft is like, you know, obviously I don't know what age you should be. I don't have kids yet, so it's hard for me to know like what age I guess they should start playing. But just knowing from one of our buddies, Matt, who, you know, he's got two kids, they first started playing Minecraft because Minecraft is, you know, low stress. They can figure things out. It's a great game for like trying to problem solve and just kind of build like basic things. So I've got Minecraft on there. And then I also put Little Big Planet, which is not a game I played a lot of, but I know that's like a very popular one, kind of in the same vein as Minecraft, where like it's just, you know, it's just like a playground essentially where you can, you know, just kind of build some things. But honestly, I just think Minecraft is probably like my number one answer for like, what game should like a kid be playing? But if it's a toddler, like I don't know, maybe there's something like even simpler than Minecraft, because I know Minecraft is, you know, does have some complexity to it, but that's what I'll go with for this one.
I'm gonna say the Silent Hill franchise. Is a life's tough, all right, kid.
At what age should they,
as soon as possible? I don't know, I would maybe say something like I would even say like Pac-Man or something like that.
Yeah. Right?
But there's some like cool games that, you know,
Frogger.
Frogger probably, if I had to like pull one from somewhere in my head.
Yeah. That should just be your answer for any question about games, you know?
Yeah, like, Frogger, I think.
Yeah, Frogger, probably.
I'm the number one Frogger fan. Anyway, but even something like Preserve, to be honest, right? Hmm. It's got some complexity there, but like I think like a 5-year-old could play like the creative mode or like the endless mode in that game. I forget what it was called, but like where you're just like, hey, here's like endless kind of just keep placing stuff and see what happens, right? Yeah. Like something explorative like Minecraft. The only thing with Minecraft is like I would suggest only creative mode for toddlers.
Yeah, for sure.
Not the not survival mode when like the creepers and the zombies start coming out.
Yeah.
But yeah, something like that. Why, Capaldi, you got a toddler? Let us know in the comments.
He's asking for himself, you know. Maybe. He wants to do a little throwback game, you know? Something like that. Also, shout out to Capolo for listening to the Rec Room last week and buying 3 boxes of those Everything But the Kitchen Sink cookies from Trader Joe's. I hope you enjoy them, man. They are delicious.
Yeah, they do sound good. They do sound good. Not my normal cup of tea, but listen, after I saw the box, I was a little bit more in. I was a little bit more on board. And the final question comes from R-Carp, who doesn't play roguelikes, so didn't give me a favorite roguelike. But favorite board game of all time?
Whew, favorite board game of all time. So we're not doing like any card games, right? This is like specifically games with a board, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. But board, like tabletop
games.
Yeah.
Oh man, this is a tough one. I mean, like, you've played a lot more of them than me. So I'm trying to think. You go ahead and answer, because I gotta look at some on here and see if it rings any bells of board games. I don't want to choose like Catan or something basic like that, you know. Those are fun, but they're classic. But
so it's hard for me because I do play a lot, right? And there are certain ones that are just kind of ruined by my gameplay experience with the people that I've played them with. But I do love Moonrakers quite a bit.
Yeah.
That game's been pretty sick. There's one called Eschaton that I love. I recommended one a couple months ago called Veiled Fate that I enjoy. But like, Catan is a banger. Dominion's really good. I love Ascension. Ascension's a great game, actually made by some former Magic pros. For the TCG fans out there, like, I like deck builders. So like, board games with deck building elements, I do like them. I'm not a huge worker placement guy, right? Like
worker placement.
Yeah, or like,
what do you mean?
Like Puerto Rico is like one of those games. Like, they're kind of board game where it's like you got to place things and they'll get resources for you, and you have to just like be the best at getting the resources in the game. I honestly hate those games with a passion. So
okay,
but they can be cool. Like, if there's a good twist to it, I'm in. But if not, get out of here.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me, because I'm honestly, I like kind of card games typically more than board games, but I play more of them, like Side Effects and Boss Monster.
I think those would count, right, to a certain extent.
Yeah, like I like playing those quite a bit, just because they're just kind of easier to play. But you know, I like the classics too. I gotta say, like, growing up, played a lot of Life board game, which our buddy Weasel, shout out to Weasel if you're listening, Weeze, had the game of Life, so we played that. A lot of Monopoly, you know, all that sort of stuff. Candyland, Battleship, you know, we played all the classics. But Honestly, my favorite game, I guess, as of late is probably Side Effects, but that's more of a card game than a board game. So it looks like I need to play more of the board games. I also did enjoy the ones you mentioned. Moonrakers was great, Eschaton. I also like Fire Tower that you have, too. Yeah. That was a cool one. I like the board games that are like, you think they're complicated, but then they end up being like, oh, this is a lot simpler. And this is like, there's a good variety every time you kind of play, good replayability. So, yeah, it's tough for me to choose a favorite one just because I feel like I haven't played enough of them. There's so many. Every time we go to PAX, I'm just like overwhelmed by like the amount of board games. I'm like, I feel like most of these are not good, so it's hard for me to like know which one to pick, but, I'll go with Mousetrap. There we go. Mousetrap number one all time.
You know, it was never worth all the setup.
Yeah, best commercials ever.
Yeah. That's
false marketing.
Now that I think about it, I think Frogger, the board game, is my favorite. Oh, man, that's a good one. Do you have a favorite roguelike?
Probably Balatro, I would say. I mean, I really do like Hades, but I just haven't played enough of it. But like, I haven't been like Balatro had me like hooked like right away. And I was just like, this is great. So I'll probably just go with that one for now, but it probably will change over time, to be honest.
Yeah. Balatro probably for me too. Dead Cells was up there. I played a lot of Dead Cells, liked Hades, really digging Wild Frost still. I'm playing a lot of that right now. I don't know. There's just like, and I started watching this YouTuber and I subscribed and I forgot the name, but like they just play like a lot of roguelikes and I'm like discovering new ones all the time. I'm like, well, that one was cool. Can I play that one? You know? So it's a bad for my wallet, but that's going to do it for the show. And we got a rec room to get to, and then we got to say goodbye. We got to send these people home. Rec room is where we recommend something that perhaps isn't an indie game. What do you have to recommend this week?
Yeah, so I found this album and band just through TikTok recently. And I've listened to a bit of the album. I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but so far, so good. It's a band called Houndmouth, and they have an album came out in 2015 called Little Neon Limelight. And best way I can describe it, which is how it was described in the TikTok I watched as well, is like the perfect road trip music. You know, you feel like you're the main character when you're like listening to this, as the kids say, right? It was just, yeah, I don't know, it's just great music to just kind of have kind of this like upbeat, I guess, sort of like indie rock, I guess you would like label it as that. It just kind of been great driving around with the music. So I definitely just recommend checking it out. I know we're going on a road trip soon, you know, to the batch party. So, you know, maybe some of those tunes will end up on the radio there. But that's my rec. Houndmouth, Little Neon Limelight. And I know you already know about this album, right? These guys.
Yeah, yeah. I've been listening to a little bit of Houndmouth in my day. Is the song Otis on that album?
I believe it is. Yeah, I think so. Sedona is on the album. I know that's like their number one song.
Yeah, Sedona's like their big hit. But Otis, man, that song. It's good.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's a great song. Yeah. Frogger. No. I am recommending a found footage horror film short-ish kind of thing. And it's only like an hour. It's on YouTube for free. It's called Milk and Cereal. Cereal spelled like serial killer. It is by the guys that do a sketch comedy YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is called That's a Bad Idea. You definitely have seen their sketches. Yeah, it's a blonde guy.
Familiar.
And then like a guy that looks like Ansel Elgort. And they're like, you know, I'm coming over right now. You're doing what? You know, like they do stuff like that. But the guy, Curry Barker, who is the blonde guy in that comedy duo, is actually an amazing director and like writer. He wrote, directed, and starred with the other guy in this found footage film called Milk and Cereal. And it was tense, like kind of funny sometimes. It's about one of those prank YouTube channels, right?
Like, okay,
where, you know, which are awful, right? Like, they just prank people, and it's so mean-spirited, and something goes wrong and it gets a little weird and tense, and like you don't know who to believe at some points, and then you kind of see like things kind of spiral down a rabbit hole. It was like really good, especially since it's like just free on YouTube. It's like a nice watch. So
nice.
Milk and Cereal. Apparently they have another short called The Chair, which is like only like 25 minutes long, which is like critically acclaimed. And that's probably the next one I'm going to watch. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. How long is Milk and Cereal?
Like an hour.
Hour. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So like just shorter than, than like a horror film would be like 90 minutes typically. So it's like an hour long.
Nice.
So
cool.
It's a fun one. It's not like super jump scary or anything like that, but like, you know, it like had like a real story. So that was like actually nice. So
nice.
So that's gonna do for the show.
Man.
Another good one. Next week. It'd be interesting. We gotta figure out some timing on next week, but you guys don't have to worry about that. Actually, you know what? Stay. We'll keep recording. We'll talk about our schedules. Now, you can continue to find me on Twitter at FreshBudsPod. I have another podcast called Fresh and Buds, third year anniversary this week. Very cool. Pablo Pintor, Pro Tour winner, former Legend of the Five Rings goat, current Flesh and Blood goat, the best. And then you can find us on all socials at Fresh Juice Pod. Where can people find you, Maddie?
Find me at Maddie Gorm, G-O-R-M, on all the socials. I've been streaming on Twitch, doing YouTube stuff, all that good jazz. So feel free to follow me over there if you would like to.
And that's going to do it for the show. Frogger fans, keep on hopping.